Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, you're tuned to. For the next 2.5 hours, stay with us for Civil Rights in Santa Cruz on the Streets. This show, we're going to focus on interviews with folks over the holiday season who've had some problems, either with police or social service agencies in terms of abuse, misconduct, or some violation of their rights as they see it. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pier, Robert Norris. Special guest Wes is in the studio to be talking to us soon. And we're going to hope for that some of the powers that be are also listening in today, some of the council members. Who knows, maybe we can even get the mayor to listen to some of this stuff. We're in the middle of camping ban hearings, and it's a crucial era, possibly an era when change will be on the agenda. Stay tuned. Nazareth, Procopio, Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Khan, One for All, Toscanini, Daquan, Din Din, Foo Falls, Rock Around the Clock, Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's got a winning team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Grace, Kate and Grace, Trouble in the Suez.
We didn't start the fire, it was always burning since the world.
We're at the Homeless Community Resource Center. It's about 8:30 on December 12th, and we're talking to
James Rook.
James, you said you've had an unusual encounter with the police somewhat a couple years ago, and actually more recently, but the one you're going to talk about is several years ago.
Yes, in July, I believe it was around July 5th or 6th, I was in the courtroom being arraigned. And at that point in time, the sheriff, deputy, came up to me and said to all 10 of us, we have a lot of cases today, and we would appreciate it if you would all plead guilty to the charges.
What were the charges?
Well, various things, everything from people who have had needles to, in my particular case, a couple of open containers, I think, something like that. And they wanted me to plead guilty to everything.
Right.
So I looked at him and I said, plead guilty? He said, well, it'll go faster and they'll probably just release you for time served. So I pleaded guilty and everybody else pleaded guilty and they released, as far as I know, almost everyone, but for time served. But they asked me to relinquish my rights.
Right. Well, you know, I heard the same thing earlier when I came out here a week ago. We were getting people to come to the Tuesday council meeting. A man told me that Judge, well, he's actually a referee, Mulligan, in the basement of the county building, hears most of the camping tickets unless you disqualify him, which everybody should. But he told the court and he told this man that if they pleaded guilty, he'd give them a lower fine.
Well, sure.
That's a clear form of pressure. One might say, kind of almost, if it's not bribery, it's a form of duress.
Intimidation is what it is.
Exactly.
And if you know you don't have any money to begin with, what a lower fine means is a shorter term in jail, right? Now, I know other people who have shown that they want something. In other words, they have a warrant against their license, they want to renew their license or something like that. And in which case, instead of giving them time served, which is normally something like maybe a warrant for open container or something like that, they give them 30 days to make them serve it at the farm because they know they want to renew their license. So they extend the sentence and make them serve the time because they know that they're working towards something that is at a higher level. Isn't that nice? I mean, obviously, what are they doing? They're making him pay a little bit higher price in order to get the thing he wants.
And the cruel thing is they're doing it with people who can't afford to pay any price around this time.
And they know that that's true.
So how long have you been in the area yourself?
I started coming to Santa Cruz in 1969. I was a resident in Sauk Valley from 1979 to 1991, and had a home and owned a home until 1993, and I've been homeless since 1993.
And, sorry.
I've been here a long time. I've seen
you're not one of these nouveau homeless who's come in to abuse all the services.
Absolutely not. No, I've been here for a long time. In fact, I hadn't abused or even gotten involved with the services until about 1995. And I had a van, and I was eventually towed away because I had enough parking tickets so that I couldn't re-register it, and therefore they got it. And they never even told me where they towed it. It was just gone, and I tried to find out. Nobody knew where it went. Called the Highway Patrol. They couldn't tell me.
Have you had any encounters with the police around sleeping outside? Do you sleep outside?
Actually, my encounters with the police sleeping outside have been relatively positive. They just asked me to pack up and move on. I've never actually gotten a ticket.
How many times in the last 6 months have you been told to pack up and move on?
At least 5 or 6.
And what's the impact on you, forcing you to do that in the middle? Was it in the middle of the night? Or
obviously, it's scary because the thing is, then you become paranoid. Like you're starting to look for the officer every time you sit down. And if you're in the middle of the night, in one particular case, I got so freaked out, I went down to, I think it was street next to Ocean View and sat down on a curb, not knowing that there was a neighbor that was watching me, and this was like about 11 o'clock at night, I think, at that time, if I remember right. All of a sudden, I hear the sirens. Here comes a fire truck, the ambulance, and 2 police cars. I'm sitting on the curb. I'm not doing anything. I'm not drinking anything. The officer looked at me and he says, well, what are you doing here? I said, I'm resting. I have bad legs. I do. I'm disabled. I have bad legs. And he says, I said, there's nothing wrong with me. I just did. Well, a neighbor called in and said it looked like you were sick. So there's this entourage comes, from all directions, lights blazing, and there I am. Just waiting, for what are they going to do to me? Because I knew I had some sort of warrant out, I think, for open container. I don't know what it was. I don't even. Oh, littering, I think, is one. I think I had one for littering.
So
I think now they could get me for a warrant on littering.
A warrant on littering. Take note, officers. Here's a man that obviously deserves to be picked up immediately. The guy is obviously very messy. His shoes are dark. Keep your eye out for him. I'm not going to go into the other more recent story you mentioned, but
I don't want to get him upset.
Right. We have another story about an officer who recently actually threatened you, and you just don't want to get into the details of that because you're afraid he might threaten you again, right?
Yeah.
Or act on his threat.
Yeah. Possible.
Thank you. You've been in the electronics industry. You're a man with a degree. You're not exactly. You had some education.
Yeah, I went to Hayward State University, and I got a BS degree from there. Went to Foothill College, went to Northeastern University, and 20 years in the electronics business in the Valley. And done some, negotiations and union stuff and a lot of unemployment hearings and, just various kinds of things that are involved in the bureaucracy and the establishment and with employees and employee relations, compensation, benefits, recruiting, that kind of stuff. So I've done a lot of different stuff in that industry.
Well, everyone's wondering, why are you homeless now?
Well, I finally got to the point where I didn't want to start up again at 52. Just didn't want to do it. It's expensive in Santa Cruz. It's tough to get started a second time. And, you know, in my particular line of work, virtually impossible to become a recruiter at age 56, you know what I mean? My physical condition isn't all that great. So, you know, it's just difficult making all the connections in order to put it all together at that level. I hate to start in something that isn't, you know, where I'm just essentially feeding the man. I'm making just about enough money to pay his taxes and about enough money not to be able to find a place at $6 or $7 an hour. There's no way to do it. There, you know, there maybe there is, but it would take at least 6 months of living essentially on the street in order to save the money to get to the point where you can pay first and last and all that. And then if all of your credit checks worked out and everything, you know, and you could get in, then you'd have to be able to stay in. So you'd, if you're, I'm divorced now, so if I'm the only wage earner, if I lost my job, the house is gone. So it's those kind of things that make me have a, you know, I'd look at it a second time and say, well, do I want to do all of that and then maybe not be able to continue the thing I want to continue, which is stay in the house? And I've seen so many people that have had that kind of a problem. They'll get involved, they'll get into it, and they'll finally get to the point where they've actually gotten in. But then, after that, 2 or 3 months later, whammo, they go back on the street because they can't. They lose their job or something happens. Or maybe even they've got an old warrant that they forgot about. And somebody gets and throws them in jail, they lose their job, and they go up and from the street.
True enough, James. Listen, thank you very much. And okay. you're very articulate about it. I'm just, I'm in motion, so you've given me something to think about, and this will be on the air hopefully on Sunday.
We're talking to
Chris Martino.
Chris, you're having a bit of cereal here this morning at the HCRC, or I guess Homeless Services Center, it's called now. Sleeping Man, you say you have a problem with?
Yes, I do. Well, I mean, a number of times I've got camping tickets and jaywalking tickets. And let's take this into another perspective. Uh-huh. Let's go a positive note. Okay, so I'm at the garden right up here at the park. And I get a camping ticket from the Rangers. And then they tell me to leave, you know, at least by the next day. And I get another one. Of course, they check the following day. So
have you gotten any recently, by the way?
Yes.
When was the last time you got one?
Well, recently for me would be a year.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because I'm trying to stay out of trouble.
Good.
But I get two in a row.
Right.
Well, you know, one day after another.
Right.
Then I'm going to work because I work, you know, I get jobs at the lumber yard. Uh-huh. And I'm walking across the street, Highway 9 River. Get a jaywalking ticket.
Right.
Yeah. So now I've got three tickets and almost a 48-hour period. You know what I mean? Okay, well, the cop, of course...
About a year ago, are you talking?
About a year ago. And then the cop, you know, of course, I walk across. He gives me a jaywalking ticket because the light's half green. In other words, the turning lane is going, and I cross as the green light is changing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we got a yellow, I cross. They gave me a jaywalking ticket.
This is here at the corner?
Right at the corner.
Or at the Homeless Community Resource Center, Highway 1 and Highway 9.
This is all in a 48-hour period.
And so same cops or different cops?
Rangers, then motorcycle police.
Uh-huh.
So Rangers gave me two tickets. They gave me one night. The following night, they gave me another one. And then while I'm walking to work, after I got two tickets in my pocket.
Right.
I'm like maybe 2 minutes late.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to meet him at 9. So I'm crossing the street. They're giving me a jaywalking ticket. Now, my boss drives right up, and he says, what are you doing to that guy? And he's
money they made, and...
What are you doing to that guy? And he's concerned.
Right.
And the cop says, giving him a ticket.
Huh?
You want one?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, my boss is stopped in the road right there.
Right.
You know, on rivers, so, you know, he's not supposed to be doing that. That's why the officer said, you know, if you want one, you know, you might want to go on. So he says to me, you know, I'll just meet you, like at Michelin Tires, you know, like where we meet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all okay. So he drives off. Cop writes me up. So I end up, in the long run, with warrants. I end up in jail. They take me,
You can't afford to pay the tickets?
Or I can't afford
You don't make the court dates because of other reasons? Or?
I really don't respect that part of the law, I would think, to be honest.
Right.
You know, so I refused.
Right.
So I refused. They put me in jail. They brought the judge. Now check this out. They bring me... Oh, I'm in a carrot suit.
New trial that he received.
They bring me... Oh, I'm in a carrot suit.
Right.
DA is arguing with this. There's a lady.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3, listening to some interviews out at the Homeless Services Center. These from about, I believe, December 12th. Having a little problem with this particular tape, which is too bad because it is a good tape. I'm going to work on it, see if we can sort of smooth it out. This is your radio station, Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3, and we do have a call-in number if you want to give us your own experiences, your own thoughts, your own objections, your own input, or stuff you just want the community to know about. We are at 427-3772 here in Santa Cruz, 427-3772. And if you want to reach us off-air, you can call the Free Radio Santa Cruz voicemail at 427-4523. Again, 427-4523. Email address, FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, at cruzio.com. FRSC at cruzio.com, and snail mail, post office box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. Again, 7507, post office box 7507, 95061 in Santa Cruz. Again, the quickest way to get to us is to call now. Call us while we're on the air. Call Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That's the show you're listening to. I'm Robert Norse, and the phone number to call is 427-3772. Well, we're in the midst here, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this community is in the midst of the camping ban discussions, or let's put it this way, the City Council's subcommittee or task force has been holding meetings and tends to hold a considerable number more meetings on the issue of whether the camping ban should be amended. For those of you who don't know what it is, which probably are very few of the regulars, but perhaps some of you new folks just tuning in, Santa Cruz has a law which makes it illegal for people to sleep outside or in vehicles from 11 to 8:30 a.m., even on much private property. And this is particularly important in a community where there are 500 to 1,500 homeless people each night, and in the winter, less than, let's be generous, 220 floor spaces. We don't want to say beds because we aren't talking about beds. We're talking about mats and blankets on the floor, but still, that is shelter. And in the summer, less than 30, actually, or I think it's 28. That's the Interfaith Satellite Program, the emergency shelter program for folks who, obviously, of that 500 to 1,500, only a very small number of people who are outside can access that. And indeed, many people make their own shelter or try to. They live in their vehicles. They camp in tents. They simply kind of go under bushes where they can. And certainly, for many folks, that's not the ideal solution, and it would be better if there were really affordable housing or options for them to park their vehicles in places legally or campgrounds, of which there is no legal current campground at all in the city. And so this law, the camping ban, has a subsection particularly onerous. We've actually been talking about that subsection, the sleeping ban section of the camping ban, which makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. And there's a second section which makes it illegal to cover up with bedding or blankets, which means it's illegal, even if you're not asleep, to, say, sit up with a blanket wrapped around you in freezing weather, which this sounds like some kind of sadistic joke, but it's not. It's a law passed in 1978 at the behest of the Santa Cruz Police Department in order to make prosecutions of people for camping easier. Prior to that time, camping was illegal on the beaches and in the parks, and it was also illegal on unimproved property without the permission of the owner. Actually, camping was illegal, period. But sleeping was illegal in those three places. But in order to make it easier, they said anyone who goes to sleep after 1978 outdoors or in a vehicle is subject to a $162 ticket. Actually, the amount of the ticket has gone up over the years as the court sets different bail schedules. But that's the condition for folks who fall asleep at night who run afoul of police. Now, the police department, for its part, has made the statement through Mike Rotkin, who's sort of their number one advocate, or seems to have been, at least from my perspective, for the last few years, as he defends this sleeping ban law. He's a council member, previously mayor, probably one of the longest on the city council members there. He was elected in 1979 and has been reelected frequently since, with some breaks. The claim of the police department is that ticketing of people outside doesn't happen much, that it happens only where there's a complaint or if there's some public protest and people, quote, want to be ticketed. Of course, protesters don't want to be ticketed. They want the law changed so that people do not have to be afraid of facing a midnight knock or bang on their van. It's not usually a knock. It's usually a rather severe rat-a-tat-tat on the back of their van. They don't want to have to face the prospect of their family, and people live in families and vehicles in this community, being woken up, treated as criminals, humiliated, put in fear, in essence, in the middle of the night, and given no legal place to move to. Because it's interesting, even though it is legal for people to sleep in the county outside the city limits in most places, there are a few no-camping zones, but generally speaking, it is legal to sleep in a vehicle on public property, both under the roadside resting provision of the county law and also just generally. There's no camping ban except in very particular areas. The sheriff's deputies collude with the Santa Cruz Police Department in not making this known because presumably they don't want to have people believe that they have human rights to sleep at night, even in the county, so people can more easily be controlled, intimidated, bullied, moved along. And I guess if you want to look at this from a more from the position of residents who are concerned about problems attendant on irresponsible camping or sleeping in vehicles, they don't want to have piles of crap on the ground, litter, bags and bottles of urine, which, as far as I know, happens infrequently, but of course when it does, it creates quite a stir, and of course would happen far less frequently if there were actually public facilities available for people 24 hours a day in different places in town, and a public education campaign that folks should use those facilities. I mean, these are obvious things, but the reason they have not been addressed in 20 years is because the law was is really designed to drive away a class of people. It's designed as a tool for the police who want to selectively go after people that they don't want around. And it's obviously impossible for the police to enforce this law even-handedly and as it's written, because it would mean arresting hundreds of people each night and putting them in jail, or at least giving them tickets. And then the second time you do it, of course, it's within 48 hours, it's $1,000 fine. Sorry, $162 for the first and $1,000, up to $1,000 for the second, and up to 6 months in jail. It becomes what we call a misdemeanor crime. So it's a weird law. It's a bad law. It's a law that almost everyone agrees, if you talk to them on the street, is wrong. I mean, there are some who like the law, the police department, some of the downtown merchants, some conservative residents, some folks in the county who are homeless-a-phobic, as I call them, and council members who are afraid of those constituencies have been supporters of the sleeping ban and of the broader camping ban law. The camping ban law also, as I said, it talks about more than sleeping. It talks about where you can sleep, where you can camp, set up a tent and cooking equipment and so forth, essentially nowhere. There are no campgrounds. There's a very elaborate permit process that I think has never been used, perhaps once or twice, in order to give the law constitutionality, because if they don't have a permit process, then the law is clearly unconstitutional, so they have a permit process. But it's never usable. It requires all kinds of insurance and liability protection that people don't have. When I tried to throw a one-night camping protest in 1989 in October on the occasion of Housing Now's national concern with housing, affordable housing, not being available to millions and millions of Americans, We went into a roundtable meeting with the police chief and the mayor and the city staff, and they told us we had to have thousands of dollars of insurance to have a one-night protest, peaceful protest on the, I think it was the bench lands of San Lorenzo Park. And, of course, that wasn't possible. That wasn't within our means. I think we held the protest anywhere, somewhere else, and the police, I think, gave us tickets, or perhaps they didn't. They were kind of hit and miss in those days, as they are now, and more intense in those days than they are now, let's be honest. The passage of a new city council and the work done by activists to publicize the absurdity and the cruelty of this law has had some effect on the police department and on other enforcement authorities like Parks and Rec, which gives out probably as many tickets as the police department, though not too clear on the stats. So this whole issue is up for discussion at the task force to City Council Task Force to Review the Camping Ordinance. And their last meeting was January 8th, that's Friday, from 4 to 5 up on the second floor of the library. Large number of people showed up, including several police officers. Vice Chief Locke was there. Sergeant Sticky Fingers Butchie Baker was there. I have to say, whenever I see Sergeant Baker in public, I'm reminded of the fact that he was never fully investigated by the city council that was supposed to investigate him, that he was given a whitewash for at least 10 instances of, what would we call it, sexual molestation, maybe too heavy, but improper treatment and handling of female prisoners. And it was a huge scandal, and it was completely suppressed, and he was declared Man of the Year next year. So this, unfortunately, colors how I see Sergeant Baker. I've got to say candidly, I've heard no recent comments of Sergeant Baker harassing women. So I want to say that perhaps he's changed his approach to the whole situation. I hope so, but I'm just appalled at what was done then, and I'm not persuaded, you know, that there has necessarily been any kind of real change in the police department. I mean that, and so I keep bringing up that issue. And unfortunately, Sergeant Baker is a symbol of this, and will continue to be a symbol until really this issue is dealt with by the kind of fair investigation that, for example, we need in the case of the lethal use of force in the case of Happy John Dine, who was shot a year ago. Happy John, in fact, this is something that our guest, Warren West, was concerned about and circulating his own petition about. He's patiently waiting for me to get over my tirade here, and I will shortly. The police department's failure to treat Dine properly, to not just on that occasion, but on many previous occasions, their general harassment of homeless people on the mall. Some of it can be traced to problems with individual officers, I'm sure, but a lot of it, I think, has to do with an attitude to cover your ass, a blue coat of silence, no matter what. And I think that the Citizens Police Review Board, which has its meeting, by the way, tomorrow, for those of you who wish to observe this farcical little body in action, they begin their hearing at 5:30. They're in the City Council on Monday. That's tomorrow, on January, what is it, the 11th? Let me look for the... It is the 11th. Thanks, Warren. And you can go there. You can speak after Lisa Rose cut back oral communications time from essentially however long you wanted to talk within the half-hour oral communications period to only 3 minutes, perhaps emulating Michael Rodkin and his time, or, to be candid with you, Catherine Byers, who's been getting pretty clipped off a lot of time on December 8th when people wanted to speak there. She cut them down to 2 minutes apiece unilaterally instead of allowing them to talk about the sleeping ban for 3 minutes each, which I think was still rankles me. I think that it shows that lack of really goodwill or good faith and wanting to hear what people have to say, particularly those who are impacted by that law. But again, the Citizens Police Review Board will be meeting on Monday at 5:30. They don't hold public hearings. They never have. And for all we know, they never will. Although with new CPRB members coming in, only three of them, as far as I know, are going to be new, at least those appointed by our new council members, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, there is still an old guard majority. And unfortunately, I don't know who they're appointing. I'm hoping that at least one good person, Sandy Brown, is going to get on, but, you know, it's hard to tell. You have I don't know how activist a minority you have, and it'll probably still be a minority. But the CPRB, again, is worth looking at, if only to show you the real lack of protection that homeless people and poor people, and probably people of color as well, because there's essentially no outreach from the CPRB in the last 4 years, almost zero outreach to the communities that feel police abuse most intensely. Instead, they spend their time wrangling about procedures and processes that they don't even use. They moan and groan that they don't have enough power when they don't use the power that they have, let's say, to have an early investigation or to have an independent investigation through appealing to the city council and getting funding, which even Councilmember Kennedy said they would have gotten in the Happy John Dine case, or in holding public hearings, which they can do without any funding, but they have declined to do so, even in the case of officers using lethal force and shooting, for example, Brian Andrus in near lethal force 5 times, and when they invaded his own home, that's Sergeant Hennig, Officer Garacio, Officer Zamanek, and Officer Berry. Serious stuff that I think not just affects those who are actually out on the streets, which is a relatively small percentage of those in the entire Santa Cruz community, but people throughout the city. And you don't even have to be poor to be harassed by police. You don't even have to be poor to run afoul of their attacks on bicyclists downtown, their absurd enforcement of the downtown ordinances. Now you might say, well, police officers just, you know, they're police officers and they have to enforce the law, and, you know, that's their job, and why should we blame them? Let's go back to the city council. And I do. I hold the city council responsible for not yet changing the sleeping ban law, even though it's a clear human rights abuse. I hold the city council responsible for maintaining the downtown ordinances in place that make it illegal to sit down within 10 feet of a shop, laws that are selectively enforced against poor people. I hold the city council responsible for the selective enforcement of laws that happens downtown around, because they are set up, and because the city council knows they're selectively enforced and countenances that selective enforcement of laws like dog on a leash. Actually, it's not even dog on a leash. It's dog on the mall. Laws like so-called conduct on public property, which means if you sit on a planter lip, that's illegal behavior. Preposterous laws designed to give the police the tools to run people out of town that they want. And then sweetheart deals between the downtown association, the judiciary, and the police, which draw people into court on these kinds of charges, pressure them into taking probation, which requires that they banish themselves from the downtown. And this kind of stuff, banishment, I thought, is something that they used to do in South Africa, you know, under the apartheid fascist regime. Fascist here is, I think, an appropriate description of the former white supremacist South African regime, fascist. And there are some who consider the Santa Cruz police to be acting in a similar fashion, and the Santa Cruz City Council to be countenancing that kind of behavior over a long, long period of time. And they use the words fascist. I usually don't use the words fascist or Nazi because I think that they kind of cloud the issue. But in many cases, it's quite appropriate to link the way police treat people here with the way Nazis treated gypsies and Jews in Germany before the actual extermination campaign began. And the whole mentality of pushing the homeless people out of sight into the ghetto that's out at River Street, of pushing the homeless people out of sight away from the downtown, out of the city limits, is, and it's also being used in other cities, it's happening in Berkeley, it's happening in San Francisco, is vicious and attacks each one of us in terms of eroding the basic conscience of this city, in terms of putting people on notice that they better damn well work their two jobs fast and hard and stay in a house, or they may end up on the streets and get the police treatment. It's a very serious issue, and it's a serious issue for all of us. And I encourage folks out there, you folks who are listening to this show, let me know. Is this a serious issue? Have you been affected by it? Am I exaggerating? Is this just more grandstanding? Am I some sort of, improperly describing the situation? The phone number to call is 427-3772, 427-3772. And I'm going to get back to these interviews with real people on the streets, but first let's talk to a real person. Wait, on the phone who just called in. Let's see if we got a person or a recording machine at the end of this line.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. Bernard.
Oh, hi, Bernard.
How are you doing?
You work with the committee to repeal the sleeping ban.
Pardon?
I recognize it because you work with the committee.
Yes.
To repeal the sleeping ban.
Right. I just wanted to, you know, to talk about tomorrow's subcommittee meeting for a moment or two.
That's the City Council Task Force to review the camping ordinance.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And I'm presenting, you know, a petition tomorrow, you know, that I've got went out and got a lot of signatures to repeal the temporarily repeal the sleeping ban and to add winter shelter space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to present that. I was told that I would be on the agenda tomorrow.
You were? Who told you that?
I think Catherine Byers when I was at the last subcommittee meeting Friday.
Now, Mayor Byers is, of course, heads this committee, which also consists of council members Keith Sugar and Chris Crone. They've been meeting at least twice a week for the last week, I guess, is when they've begun their regular meetings. And you were at that last Friday meeting. Any want to give us an update on what happened there?
Can you just hold a second, though?
Of course.
Sure. You know, I just want to finish my thought here.
Sure, go ahead.
My thought is that after I present, you know, my petition to them, I want my allies and my friends, you know, to offer concrete ways that right now that we can temporarily, you know, relieve homeless people. And like opening up Harvey West Park, opening up parking lots, you know, adding some showers, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's real important to do. So we put the ball in their court.
Now, of course, the time of this meeting, if I'm not mistaken, is from 4 to 5, and that is going to be at the Civic
ABC room at the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium.
Right, which is right across from the City Council on, what is that? Is that, that's not Church Street?
Yeah, I think it is.
Is Church Street. Yeah, and if you get lost, go to the City Council offices and ask where it is. But it is the ABC room, 4 o'clock tomorrow, Monday the 11th.
Right.
And I guess if you can't come to the meeting but you feel strongly about it, you can always call the City Council hotline or message line. Even today they have their 24-hour message line. And leave a message. I guess Mayor Byers is 429-3550. I think it's 7-pound key. Does that ring a bell to you? Do you know?
Robert, I never recall them.
You never recall that? Yeah, I have a similar problem with it.
Actually, but they'll tell you, you know, I mean.
Well, no, they won't tell you.
The machine will tell you.
No, that's true. The machine will tell you.
Yeah.
So if you want to leave a message, a positive suggestion about how the City Council can proceed to actually spend some small amount of money to allow for emergency shelter for homeless people in freezing winter, above and beyond the max of 220 spaces that are for 500 to 1,500 homeless people, you know, I mean, they are spending $12.5 million on a police department after all. You know, maybe they could, you know, throw a few peanuts at the homeless as well during this time when they're having such a vigorous discussion about the camping ban. I guess you're looking for both positive suggestions, and you're also asking the City Council to rescind the sleeping ban
temporarily.
And explain to us what that's about, Bernard.
Well, what it means is people can't sleep outside in city, you know, area between the hours of 11 at night and 8:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is, like, if the city could do something about that and provide some safety zones of some type, that would give homeless people more of an equal footing when these big debates come in, you know, in February or late January. And that's very critical, you know, to have homeless people there really being able to debate the issue. And if they're hungry, you know, or if they're, you know, don't have proper, you know, if they don't have a proper grounding, you know, they're not going to be able to debate it as well as somebody, you know, that goes to a warm, fuzzy bed every night, you know.
Well,
that's my way of my thinking.
Well, I guess I'd also think that if they have to worry about where they're going to sleep that night, and if they have to worry about whether they're going to be arrested on a warrant that they have from a sleeping ticket that happened a week ago or a month ago or a year ago, they won't even be able to show their faces there for
that
fear of being arrested, right?
That's a very good point, Robert.
You know, I think that it's not only good to call for a suspension of the sleeping ban, but also to ask them to the city council to direct the city attorney to stop prosecutions during this period because this law is up for discussion. Of course, the city attorney, we know, on December 8th, kind of gave this ambivalent answer. He told them one thing, and he told me something somewhat different, and about whether I think the city attorney said they needed to change the law in order to change the enforcement practice, and Catherine Byers then passed this proposal with the support of her new three majority that said tickets should be issued only on complaint or after warning. Isn't that good enough? Why do you need more than that, Bernard?
Well, we probably need a lot, but, you know,
I mean, are you saying the police are not following that practice of not ticketing people during this process?
I don't think that. I can't prove it, but I think that people have gotten tickets after that meeting, the December 8th meeting, and, you know, even if they're doing warnings, I mean, you know, people are still, you know, terrified, you know, being woken up 4 a.m. in their car. Anyway, Robert, but you asked me, you know, to give you some update.
Yes.
Of what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was, in my heart, I was very disappointed at Keith Sugar's response, you know, to Roxanne's, Akis Tepachi's criticism that she leveled at him, you know, for not, you know, doing anything around the emergency shelter thing right now. Mm-hmm. And
I think she wasn't criticizing Keith so much. She was criticizing the entire city council and, of course, the majority of four, who is really nominally headed by Catherine Byers. I think she was criticizing the mayor and her majority because they have the votes. They could do
okay,
something.
Okay, well, yeah, all right. I just can't express it as well as that. But
no, that's fine. You're doing fine.
The way I seen it, though, Keith did not. What I'm getting at, Robert, is that Keith Sugar really didn't deal with her, you know, with her concerns.
Right.
You know, I mean, Keith just went on to say, well, government doesn't change so fast, you know, and that I have to get all the people together, things like that. Well, you know, it was kind of a truthhood. But it was so general. It really didn't make contact with the type of thing that we really need, you know, in the immediate moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it came across to me. And for me, that part of the meeting, you know, really hurt me the most.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And that's all I really want to say. But can I just take one more minute, Robert,
sure,
to express what I'm feeling around Mamiya.
Go ahead.
As I don't know if all, you know, my radio audience knows this or not, but the governor is not going to sign, you know, an execution, you know, a Mamiya. They're going to rely on a 1995 court decision made by Judge Szabo. Well, what that means in essence is that the time for federal appeals is going to be cut down, and it's going to be, it may end up only being 6 months. That means that we only have 6 months to build a mass movement. And I'm asking, you know, my friends and my allies, you know, to call Sam Farr's office, you know, and tell him, you know, that he needs, you know, to do something for Mamiya. We have a city council resolution, you know, a city went on record, you know, asking for a new court trial. So he has the backing of the Santa Cruz community. He needs to do something. And one of the things that I'd like to suggest to Sam Farr is, you know, that he raise $100,000, you know, for Mamiya, you know, for the defense of Mamiya. You know, if they can go out and raise, you know, millions of dollars, you know, for their political campaigns, which are really bribery,
right,
you know, in my opinion, you know, they can raise $100,000 for Mamiya. That's what I'm going to be asking Sam Farr to do. And I hope my friends and my allies, you know, will ask Sam Farr to do other things,
right,
and also ask them to do that.
Well, thank you, Bernard. I also want to point out there is a January 18th video showing at Loudoun Nelson Center at 6:30 of Mumia Abu-Jamal, A Case for Reasonable Doubt, a much better film than the 2020 smear job that came out recently.
I know.
I want to thank you. I got to move on.
All right. Well, thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is your station, as I said before, and will say again. And to call us, call 427-3772, and you can be on the air and discuss what we're talking about, or maybe shift what we're talking about, though my focus is civil rights for poor people. Again, getting back to the series of meetings that are happening around the camping ban, I have been criticized for holding Catherine Byers particularly responsible for there not being any real strong protection for homeless people over the that people who make their own shelter in vehicles or try to huddle in sleeping bags together outside are subject to the camping ban, and particularly to the sleeping ban, sections of the camping ban, the sleeping ban ordinance, and that instead of adopting the stronger protections that Keith Sugar, Councilmember Sugar, proposed on December 8th, which said don't ticket unless there's a health and safety complaint, and we suggested, as Bernard has suggested on the phone, our last caller, that there actually be a complete suspension of the sleeping ban while the whole issue is being talked about, and particularly during the winter, where people have enough problems dealing with the cold. The idea that they're going to flock to town to freeze and sleep outside is preposterous on its face, so it obviously that argument has no merit in the winter. Though they may flee from San Francisco and Berkeley, that's true. To some extent, people flee from other places that are worse. So I guess you can say, if we really want to get brutal, we can drive more homeless people away and please those of us who don't want homeless people around at all. But that's, of course, ridiculous and not something that we voted for and not something the majority of Santa Cruzans support. In fact, the majority of Santa Cruzans, in any poll I've ever seen, support ending, that's E-N-D-I-N-G, ending the sleeping ban. Not in 4 months, not in 2 months, but now, when it has some real point during the winter. As I said, Keith Sugar tried to get stronger protections for homeless people. He didn't propose that the sleeping ban be ended. He proposed that other laws be enforced whether it's a real health and safety concern. And that was voted down, not just by Rodkin, Hernandez, and Matthews, but by Byers and Fitzmaurice. And that, of course, really stuck in my craw, and I've been making a lot of noise about that, and I will continue to make noise about that, because I think it was the wrong thing to do. And I don't understand why it was done. Perhaps Catherine Byers can explain it to me. The closest she's gotten so far is to tell me that it was that she wasn't consulted in advance by Keith Sugar. Well, he may not have consulted her in advance, but she had information from me several days ahead that we had proposed an alternate series of points to buff up what she was proposing, which was essentially a regurgitation of the current police policy, which is we don't ticket except on complaint, and we don't ticket except after warning, which if you talk to almost any homeless person, they'll tell you is, dare we say it on the air, bullshit. They don't do that. The officers themselves do what they want to do, and the officials, like the very well-attired and soft-spoken and well-mannered Jeff Locke, support them. And that is, of course, the shame and the sadness of the Santa Cruz Police Department that we hope we're going to see some reform around. But to kind of whitewash this or soft talk it or soft soap it is not something I'm going to do, even if that means that other council members aren't going to like me and certain council members won't talk to me. I mean, I'm sorry. I have to speak the truth on this issue, and I will. I will continue to speak the truth, and I will continue to speak my conscience on this issue. On the other hand, it is also important to note that Catherine Byers per se is not to blame for this situation. I don't want that confusion to be in the minds of anyone. This is an entire city council we're talking about, and three of them are far worse than Catherine Byers on this issue: Hernandez, Rodkin, and Matthews. These three really bear the burden of this criminal activity by the police department violating human rights, this abuse under color of law, which they have been told about repeatedly, but they choose to turn their eyes away from, or they choose to remain indifferent to because they have other things that are important. Who knows what their rationale is? I don't know. It's really their responsibility, of course, as well. But the reason that the good guys, people like Sugar, Crone, and Fitzmaurice, good guys on this issue, I mean, Cynthia Matthews is a fine person. I like Mike Rotkin. And, you know, Michael Hernandez, who I have a lot of problem with as a city council member and previously as a Citizens Police Review Board member, is a great plumber. You know, I got no problem with it as a human being. But when these people put themselves in positions of public authority, when they stand behind policies that abuse and violate human rights, then unfortunately, they're going to get heat. I'm going to make it as hot as I can for these people because their responsibility is to the community to change those policies yesterday. And if they don't, then they should receive and they should be confronted with the wrath of the community, just as Scott Kennedy was confronted with that wrath, just as Mike Rotkin was confronted with that wrath in the Beach Flats controversy. Because that's you don't evict 163 families onto the street with bulldozers because Charlie Canfield wants to expand his boardwalk. Sorry, Charlie. And I'm sorry, City Council. That's not you don't keep people freezing in the winter because you think that it's politically more savvy to wait till February to talk about it because Catherine Byers has the fourth vote, you think. You know? I'll tell you who has the fourth vote. The people have the fourth vote. And if the three members of the City Council who were elected really felt strongly on this issue, I don't know. I don't know how strongly you feel, council members, but I think that, and I know that there's the Brown Act that says only three people can get together, and one wonders why those three were not on this subcommittee, why Byers did not appoint those three to the subcommittee, although I suppose it would immediately be bruited about that only people who want humane and decent treatment for homeless people were put on this committee and not old-line reactionaries like Rotkin, Hernandez, and Matthews. But the fact of the matter is, it's winter, it's cold, police harassment is continuing, and what's being done is happening very slowly, if anything. Now, let's give credit where credit is due. It looks to me like police harassment, or at least police ticketing, is down. I've only heard of like less than 10 tickets this winter so far that have been directly brought to my attention. And I promised the certain council members and members of the task force that I would try on this show to play accounts, and I'm going to continue to play some accounts. My voice goes on forever, so I've got to shut myself up quickly here after we talk a little bit with Warren, who continues to wonder when he's going to get a word in edgewise over here. It looks like ticketing may be down. Now, it's another question about whether contacts, harassment of people without tickets, move along, or we'll give you a ticket, move along, or you'll be forced out of town, move along, that kind of stuff, which people do not... You don't find many people saying, no, it's my constitutional right because the city council has said you have to give me a warning and there has to be a genuine complaint here or, you know, there's no place for me to go. To say those kinds of things to police officers in the dead of night who are confronting you with guns and flashlights, something that most folks don't want to do, and understandably, particularly people who are poor and homeless and have to deal with that same cop the next night. So it's unrealistic to expect people to do this. And what police do is often they will enforce the sleeping ban and have been enforcing the sleeping ban without giving tickets. We tried to set up a phone number to deal with this hotline number, which incidentally, callers, you can call if you know people who have either been hassled or ticketed in the last month after December 8th to give us a tally. That number is 457-9754, extension 411. Again, 457-9754, extension 411. And talk about what you know. You don't have to give your name if you don't want to. You don't have to have all the details, but just give us some indication. Not many people have called in on that line. I have talked, as I say, to I've gotten at least 20 accounts of 20 tickets or complaints, and I'd hope to be able to play some of that on the air, and some of it may, in fact, be coming out through these tapes, but I have to confess to a high level of disorganization in my show. A lot of this is going to require more work, and so I'm going to have to give it to you, and you're going to have to some extent take this on faith, though, again, we will be presenting, hopefully, clearer documentation at the Monday meeting of the task force, though it may take till next Thursday, because these are Monday and Thursday meetings of those who are interested of the Camping Ban Task Force, usually from 4 to 5. Monday it'll be in the ABC room. Thursday it'll be in the second floor of the library. So I'm going to play some more accounts, generally, of police harassment, some of them involving sleeping ban stuff, but my hope to have a concise and specific sort of ABCD chronological account of people who claim that they have been either harassed or ticketed by police after December 8th, either without a warning or without a complaint, is going to have to wait. And I ask you to bear with me on this and to please give me and give the task force all the information you can on this issue. Again, the number is 457-9754, extension 411. If you want to call and join the studio, this whole program in progress, call 427-3772. And if you want to catch me off air and contact HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group that's very concerned with these issues, call 423-HUF, 423-4833. Well, I can delay no longer. This man, his patience is endless, or else he's fallen asleep in order to avoid the sleeping ban, perhaps getting in a little extra time here. How you doing, Warren?
Hey, good. Good, Robert. I enjoy hearing you speak on this homeless ban. I had an interesting thing happen to me a couple weeks ago. The windows were broken out of my van, and
you live in your van, right?
I was then, and I put all my belongings in a shopping cart, and I'm tooling down the road. And since the police were on Soquel were concerned where there's no sidewalks, that I may have crossed over the bicycle line with a shopping cart, and I immediately reported an act of vandalism, and they weren't concerned a bit.
Vandalism about
through my van, yeah. And so that was like, well, we'll see.
These were the Capitola police or the sheriffs?
I was a sheriff, and I thought, well, he didn't want a real crime. But then he stopped long enough to see if what I was doing was walking a shopping cart down a street with no sidewalk.
He was more concerned with your pushing a shopping cart than with your report as a taxpaying member of the community with destruction to your own van.
Right, and. So he said, well, he wasn't going to take a report, but I would have to report it in Aptos police, go back out there. Well, they're only, Aptos police are only there during day hours. And I really miss Pacific Avenue. I don't get down there much because of harassment. I miss the girls selling jewelry and the musicians. And
you say harassment on Pacific Avenue. What kind of harassment have you experienced, if any?
Oh, on Pacific Avenue, I was ticketed for sleeping, camping, when I was sitting out in front of Georgiana's about 5:30 in the morning. I was waiting for this coffee shop to open at, I think, 6:30. And it was a pretty cold evening. I couldn't sleep, so I was just sitting there.
Did you have a blanket wrapped around you?
I don't think I did. I think I may have. When was this? I was told that my eyes were closed as I was watching the cop walk up to me. And that's pretty bizarre. And then I think... When was this? Oh, that was probably a year or so ago. Like I say, I haven't had much trouble with the police in a year because I moved away from Pacific Avenue.
Well, you see, I think it's been my contention that that's the objective, is to get homeless people away. So that the town could be regarded as pristine.
Right, and it's kind of a meeting place. It was nice to go down there and see the diversity of all the peoples getting along, and I don't think the police like that. I don't think they don't like people communicating on a street level.
Why do you say that?
Well, they rouse people to so that they can't get to know shop owners and people on a good basis, you know. I remember this a couple weeks ago. There was a girl and a guy, and they were standing in a little enclosed behind what used to be Woolworths, and they weren't blocking the road or nothing. And they got the word to move out, and all they were selling were they were just two beautiful people selling little beautiful pieces of jewelry. We're all displaying them, and I thought, well, they need a license, but yet all these people that set up on Soquel around the swap meet and on vacant lots and stuff, they're displaying their goods and they don't have a license. Why is it only Pacific Avenue or thereabouts that people need licenses? And And it seems like the bad and the bummer cops end up in that neighborhood, too. I don't know why.
You know, it's interesting. I know that as early as 1990, Jabberwocky J. Green, as I called him, who was one of the main people behind the post office homeless table, went to jail for many, many sleeping tickets and spoke very eloquently. For 8.5 months, he was at that table at the post office. He was a craftsperson who actually, the only reason he stayed in town and got involved in all this political ferment around the sleeping ban then, as now, was because police confiscated his craft work. And I'm trying to remember if it was some sort of wood sculpture or prints or jewelry. But he went to Marty Wormhout, who was then mayor, and he asked her if she would consider a proposal to set up a special sort of free crafts area. And I believe in Eugene, for instance, they have something similar to that. I know in Berkeley you can get there's a lottery every day for getting a place on the avenue for a spot for selling stuff. But that, I think, is one of the positive suggestions perhaps that Bernard was looking for, and that I think we have to start really coming out with. Because in the midst of this whole sleeping ban controversy, which is real, how can you go anywhere unless you can sleep? I mean, it's sort of a basic thing. But there are other elements, too. I mean, the town, I think the vision you have of a community where all kinds of people are welcome, where this kind of diversity actually, it not only improves the human fabric, but, I mean, I would say it would also improve the economic fabric. I mean, one of the draws of the area, I know this is sort of a cliche, is colorful folks.
Yeah, the diversity does draw people. And even though people may have holes in their designer jeans, they spend big bucks if you allow them to congregate downtown and have a good time. So I think, you know, I've seen it in Sacramento when they closed off the mall to street traffic and they allowed more pedestrian traffic. And instead of saying, the long hairs or the undesirables are taking over all our parks, they built more parks. And so there was parks for everybody. You know, I don't know how you term somebody undesirable just because they're different than you. But there's enough here that's good where we could have more open space in the downtown for diversity. And more art exhibits, you know, make people want to come downtown and not just be tagged for a parking ticket or for what they have in their wallet.
The wrong way on the bike or bike wrong way in the street. I mean, I think the Downtown Association had a good idea when they started showing movies on the sides of buildings at night.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly, yeah. More of that. More movies, more concerts, like a Friday night series concert. So.
First night type events.
Exactly, yeah. All that's good, you know. It could be like first night every month of the year would be nice.
I think San Francisco, and I haven't got any stats to prove this, but I know they hold neighborhood fairs frequently, and I think that's one good way to go to not just draw in the community, but to draw in surrounding communities as well. You know, you've been talking to me before we went on the air about affordable housing and the problems that you and others have been having looking for it, and you suggested a particular some particular concerns you had.
Well, I was disheartened. I was wondering, how do these people justify their salary if they only get two or three people a day maximum for 5 or 10 minutes per visit at their homeless agency or their Section 8 agency out on 41st to just say, well, you're seventh in line. You fill out these forms, and then they give you a flyer with possible addresses that are obsolete. And I just don't understand how they justify their own salary, because as far as I know, nobody's getting any housing, or none of my friends that I've ever met are getting any housing. They opened up some trailers out at River Street, but then you had to be disabled. And one or two of my friends got in a trailer, but I think the number is not very many.
You're talking about community house, or what I guess was originally called community house and then became highly expensive community trailers.
Yeah, well, they're affordable to a person disabled, but I don't know what the rent is. I think it's low rent, but it's just a few number of people, and you got to be physically disabled to get in there.
I don't know if that's actually true, but I know that Well, I'd actually like to get a full report on Community House, and hopefully at some future show we can do that.
It's not very many. I think it's 12 or 28 at the most. It's not very...
It's less than 40, I believe.
It's not a very big... there's like, I think, 10 trailers and 3 people in each trailer. I think that's about stretching it.
Well, I constantly, not constantly, but frequently have criticized Community House, which is now run by Karen Gillette and the Homeless Services Center, but previously was under the aegis of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, because previously on that property there was a huge campground which served, I don't know, 5 times as many at least most of the time. And I think that's another one of my concerns about Byers, Catherine Byers, is that she spent 6 months supposedly running around looking for a campground, an alternate site for the people who were moved off that area, alleged to allow for this trailer project to begin. It didn't begin until 19 months later, and they never found another site. And to me, I guess I feel that the city authorities do not take the needs of homeless people seriously in Santa Cruz, and that they don't take injustices against them seriously. And I want to see that change. And I want to encourage people like Councilmember Keith Sugar, Councilmember Chris Grown, Mayor Byers, hey, Councilmember Rotkin, I'll encourage them all to change that whole perspective. But in the process of encouraging people, one has to note what their actual behavior is like while you're encouraging them. And if they are doing things like holding meetings that people don't get to hear about or aren't invited to, as, for example, the first 2 task force meetings of this camping ban on December 14th and the 17th, nobody heard about, even though there were hundreds of people interested and who came to a city council meeting on the 8th, if these meetings are initially not even going to be recorded, so people who don't go to work or who do go to work can't afterwards hear what went on in those meetings because they can't attend them, we had to get them recorded by... I was the one who recorded the first meeting that came on this camping ban thing, and finally now it's being done as a matter of course, and I'm glad... There seems to me a lot of dirt in the process, and maybe that's a necessary thing. Maybe we're going to be seeing that change, but perhaps to make it change, for example, to make these meetings public. They weren't going to be public beforehand until we insisted, for instance, that the focus meetings, the 2-hour meetings that happen with different groups, be made public. And we said, if you don't make them public, we're going to show up and present ourselves there, and you can use your public police to publicly arrest us, because by God, they're going to be made public. And then they were made public. So I'm glad that that happens. But I have to harangue a bit, because it seems to take an awful lot of energy to get that done.
I know I tried to go to two or three city council meetings, and more often than not, there's not enough room. And I try to make a suggestion that they should hold it across the street at Laud Nelson, where you can
the civic auditorium.
Yeah, where you could get the full people, because I know there'll always be 20, 30, or 50 people standing outside that don't get in. Well, and there's a lot of people, myself included, say, well, why waste my time to go down there just so I can stand outside like a fool, can't hear nothing going on. There's not enough room inside for the people that are concerned. Now, if they really wanted a concerned constituency, a show out, they'd at least provide enough space so people could show up. And until they do that, might as well say it's a closed session. It's, you know, if they're there first and you fill up the building, well, those that come on time are maybe the first timers, but they don't get in.
Well, I think that's true, and I find that's very interesting, because I have here a set of schedule of the upcoming meetings of the task force. And the task force, I should explain to our listeners, they meet twice a week from 4 to 5, either in the Civic Auditorium, ABC Room, or in the second floor of the library. And I guess maybe they'll be meeting at some points in the city council manager's office. All of them, that's all within a block. All those locations are within a block of each other. And if you want to come to the meeting and you're unsure, the best thing to do is to call the city council staff beforehand, 429-3550, and ask them. And while you're doing that, tell them to end the sleeping ban and to tally your vote on that. But I noticed that there are 2 big forums planned. There's a public forum from 6:30 to 9:30 on January 25th, Monday, about the sleeping ban. That's, again, Monday, January 25th. That's about 2 weeks down the road. It's not being held in the Civic Auditorium, where there could be a very large audience accommodated. Instead, it's being held in Loudoun Nelson, where there's a considerably smaller audience allowed. Now, there are some who would say, well, you know, maybe that civic auditorium is taken up for that night. But one would think they could find one night when the civic auditorium was available for a public forum. And in fact, if any council members are listening, I would suggest you do that if you really want to have a large audience. I mean, it's an obvious suggestion, and I guess, you know, it's not that I want to nitpick this task force to death. That's not the point. I'm not going to let off on my believing that unless you lift the sleeping ban during this whole period, you're going to exclude homeless people from the discussion in large part, because they will have to spend times avoiding warrants, they will have to spend times looking for sleeping spots, they will not be able to be a part of this, and it's completely unjustified to do that. You either have to lift the sleeping ban, or you have to put into place some really strong protections for homeless people regarding the police. You have to have the city attorney agree to stop prosecuting. You have to get the police department to agree they're going to do ticketing as the lowest priority, that they're going to do it only if there's another place for someone to go. They're going to do it only if there's a health and safety concern. Those are different criteria I've proposed. We presented these, and Keith Sugar, to his credit, put that stuff forward on December 8th, and now seems even to be ashamed that he did. I mean, I hope he's not. I think it was a great thing for him to do, and I hope he continues to propose such things. I want to work with this task force if I can. You know, I mean, I've been to all their meetings. I try to present information that I think is helpful. I try to bring people to their meetings. I try to tell people to call in and talk to them and give them ideas. And I think we need to do that. I also think we need to keep on their ass, because I think that the fact that they started meetings that were initially closed was bad. And I think that the fact that their focus meetings were closed until we actually literally had to threaten to get arrested to get into them was bad. I think that they didn't record those meetings was bad. I think that they haven't yet established a process by which homeless people can come to those meetings and then get a ride back to the armory shelter. That needs to be done. Now, maybe once you take the more upbeat approach and say, well, these are all these problems we have to deal with, we're going to work them out, dilemmas we have to face, and I think, you know, that's fine. And I applaud people who present them in those terms. I take a somewhat more cranky stance, if you will, and I say, when you bring up this issue three times and they don't do anything about it, then it's time to start ranting and raving, because it seems clear that they don't intend to do anything about it. And I think, frankly, that ranting and raving put this issue on the December 8th agenda in the first place. I mean, I'm told that we should be very grateful that Catherine Byers put it on the agenda. What she actually put on the agenda did not add one bed or one floor space of shelter space. And the recommendation about this camping ban being enforced, the sleeping part of the camping ban being enforced only if there are tickets or only if there are complaints or warnings, was what the police were doing beforehand. One can give credit, as I said, and I will say again to Councilmember Sugar, however much this may embarrass him, for standing up and saying, we need a clear differentiation between sleeping and other kinds of abusive behaviors that are properly targeted with law, like urinating, defecating, creating a public nuisance, you know, blocking the sidewalk, whatever. The other stuff that actually has a real impact on health and safety should be dealt with. But for God's sake, don't go after people for sleeping, particularly not in the middle of the winter. And you can say, well, why not just wait till February when the city council will work all this out? And I mean, people for 20 years have been getting harassed under the sleeping ban. Why don't you just keep quiet and sit still till February till this happens? I mean, aren't you being unreasonable by suggesting that something should be done now? Aren't you sort of proposing that things be done prematurely? And my answer to that, well, what is your answer to that? Do you think we should sit and wait till February? What's your feeling?
Well, no. Common sense dictates it'll be warmer in the coming months, and something should be addressed now, as when the temperatures are cold in the middle of the night.
You know, that to me is sort of like ABC, and it also when I spoke to Mayor Byers 2 days ago, and I was actually 4 days ago, very briefly, and then she talked again with me 2 days ago. I asked her, you know, Catherine, do you favor ending the sleeping ban? And she wouldn't say. She said, I can't tell you. I don't know. And to me, this means anyone who doesn't know after 10 years of being around this sleeping ban is either playing politics, has been brainwashed by Mike Rotkin, is not being entirely honest with us, Or I'm not quite sure what is actually happening here. And you might say, well, you know, she wants to be objective and hear all the, you know, the public testimony first. But the fact of the matter is, one brings legislation in because one has an objective. One doesn't. I mean, it's like, is she entering this process of looking over the sleeping band because she wants to see which way the wind is blowing? I mean, is she saying, gosh, it's going to irritate the police to change this? You know, do we need to change it or can we do something else? I mean, I frankly find that position contemptible. And some will say, well, you're attacking the mayor by saying that. I say, no, I'm not attacking the mayor. I'm attacking the idea that one can sort of take a neutral position on basic human rights or whether people can be harassed at night for sleeping. You cannot take a neutral position on that and also then claim to be leading the city as mayor on that issue. You know, now, you can also say, well, you know, she doesn't want to be accused later of being partisan, of being biased, of being, you know, partial. There's nothing wrong with being partial in favor of human rights. I mean, if you weren't partial, why would you bring up the issue in the first place? You know, I think it's fair to say, yeah, I think the sleeping ban should be repealed. We're going to give a lot of people to talk about it, a lot of chance, because I might change my mind on it. You know, I mean, obviously, you could present new evidence. I can change my mind. But for her to enter into this process and for the three new council members to countenance this idea that the person leading their show is somebody who hasn't made up her mind on the sleeping ban.
That's sad. I think Santa Cruz deserves better, somebody with some decision that can make a decision. You know, hopefully in favor of civil rights, as you say.
So, you know, my problem is that I want to be able to sign on board, and, you know, I am signing on board. I'm supportive of changing the sleeping ban. I'm supportive of these hearings insofar as they favor that objective. But I got to point out that these are the most hearings in history that this city council has ever had on any subject, at least in the last 5 years. They are having a total of, let's look at the next week's hearings. On Monday, on January 11th, tomorrow, from 4 to 5, the task force meets in the ABC room at the Civic Auditorium. And I invite you to come to that. On Tuesday, there's a city council meeting. And that's not, we won't consider that a part of their meeting, though what they should do on that city council agenda is they should have something on the agenda to protect homeless people. That's what Bernard was saying. There should be a process by which if people are going to come to these meetings, they're not going to be arrested for sleeping that night, unless they're doing something abusive. If people are going to come to these meetings, they're not going to have a police officer come in and grab them by the scruff of the neck and say, you got a warrant for 3 sleeping tickets. You know, if there's going to be no democratic process unless that is happening. And that, as far as I know, is not on the agenda for Tuesday at our city council meeting. So let's be clear. There is no clear will to include homeless people in a way that protects them during this process, as far as I can tell. You know, they want to proceed with the process. They want to talk about the camping ban. They want to come to maybe some decisions on what to do about the camping ban, which is the broader law in which the sleeping ban is embedded. But they don't want homeless people to be protected during that process. At least they aren't taking any action to really ensure that. And that's wrong. That has to be changed. And folks out there, if you're interested in changing that, I encourage you to give a call to City Council by calling 429-3550 and push the pound key and say, oh, City Council, there's a meeting on Tuesday. Let's rescind the sleeping ban so people who have to sleep at night and who are poor don't get arrested and they can actually do some discussion of the issue, give us their real input without threat of arrest or jail or tickets or harassment. I mean, and let's not wait, as you put it, Warren, until the weather warms up and the issue loses its force, because the issue has the most public force when people are freezing their asses off. And when people are dying of hypothermia or perhaps hanging themselves. Now, we had a man who hung himself, and we were immediately assured at this task force meeting by Vice Chief Locke, oh, that was an autoerotic death, that this guy was, you know, getting his rocks off by hanging himself. Now, I don't know if that was the case. It seems kind of strange to hang yourself outside for this, you know, and then the facts aren't out. I don't know who it was. Do you have any insight into this?
I don't see how anybody could tell unless they were a witness. I think that's just, you know, picking at straws, because I'd like to see a coroner's report. How could you say conclusive? You got somebody that's asphyxiated, if they did it themselves, or and I haven't even heard if the man had a name. You know, it just seems like everything was swept under the rug. Like perhaps it was an embarrassment that somebody may have killed himself in our parks.
Well, I know you were concerned enough about another death to begin circulating a petition 6 months after that death happened. You want to talk a little about that?
Well, I read the witness reports to Happy John Dying's death, and I just don't see how 9 or 10 witnesses could be declared having bad vision or a bad line of sight. And all the cronies of the police and the ride-along say, well, it was justified shooting, that he did have a gun in his hand, and 9 other people said no, they didn't have a gun in his hand. To me, it's outraged. I'm still outraged that the Santa Cruzans swallowed this ball of guff, this out-and-out BS, that the Sentinel and the committees downtown just pushed bullshit on the people. And it's a shame, because the next person killed could be you and I, your son, your daughter, your grandmother, and it would just be, oh, justified shooting. And this was definitely not a justified shooting as far as weighing the evidence of what I've read of the witness reports. Definitely not a justified shooting.
Right around holiday time, then hands out lots of citations to people who ask for a dime. You cannot sit on the sidewalk, you cannot lean on the wall, you cannot stand in a doorway, cannot be here at all. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something. How people don't care anymore. Maybe this town's gotten colder. Maybe the people have changed.
So, Warren West, yes. You circulated this petition about what did you want the city council or the city to do around the case of Happy John Dying?
Well, I would have thought that there'd be some reprimand for a cop that accidentally kills a person wrongfully, a wrongful death suit, or punishment for a police that accidentally makes a mistake and kills somebody. You know, it's just not just business as usual. If I accidentally kill somebody in a car, I'm accountable. You know, if I'm a cab driver, I lose my cab license. If somebody dies in my, you know, and if a cop accidentally kills somebody, I think they should not be cops anymore. You know, that's just my opinion.
A rendition of...
This song is just called Happy.
Go for it. And the musician, of course, is Randy Hale.
Randy Hale.
At your service. Go, Randy.
Happy John Dine was a friend of mine. Lived here by the sea. Down on the streets of Santa Cruz, he always laughed at me. Happy and I went to church one night, thank God, and ate our fill. Asked him if he had any money, give me a fake dollar bill. Where is Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy, Happy's in a grave. Oh, where is Happy? Shot down today. And it's, yes, the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay.
Pappy was as harmless as a butterfly. Loved everyone he met. He never left the 60s. Didn't really care for the internet. One day he was grooving to some tunes and doing the happy bop when a bullet entered his chest. Came from a Santa Cruz cop. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where is Happy? He's gone away. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. Now people like Happy, I do believe. Heaven is great, great spirits. You know, like whatever you got here, less of, you got more there. Could happen. So I think he's up there. I think he's looking down. And he's probably saying, hey man, right on. I know you. Power to the people. Where is Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say, yeah, I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say.
Chad with the Homeless Community Resource Center on December 3rd. We're talking to... we're talking to an anonymous individual. We'll call you A. So, A, what happened today that caught your eye?
Today, a lot of the police officers of Santa Cruz were arresting people for no reason at all. And I felt that it was the right of the people of Santa Cruz to know this and to so we can get a stop to it.
I mean, now, where did this happen?
From Highway 1 all the way to the clock tower.
And this is along River Street here?
Yes.
And about what time of day?
Noon today.
And how were you walking by? Were you
walking about, and I saw a lot of people getting harassed by cops for no reason.
Were these Santa Cruz City Police, or were they like deputies or Highway Patrol?
Santa Cruz Police.
And did you get any sense as to what they were doing and why?
No. I didn't see that if they had anything else to do except for just to mess with the homeless people for today. I mean,
did they seem to be singling out particularly homeless people? Were they stopping everybody? Were they searching people?
No, I didn't see anybody being searched, but I mean, I seen people getting harassed for spitting a sidewalk or smoking a cigarette or just walking across the street, you know.
And this is around noon today?
Yeah, noon today.
And how many cops did you see doing this?
There was... I don't know, in between six different cops there.
And were there police cars parked as well?
Yes.
How many cars did you see?
Four.
And for how long did this go on as far as, how long did you stay?
A couple hours. I mean, it was downtown. I mean, I heard about it all day, so, but I went on my own business, so.
Right. And this doesn't sit too well with you?
No.
Because you didn't see any rapes or murders or assaults or anything, or automobile accidents happening there?
No.
You just saw police stopping people?
Police stopping people for no apparent reasons, just to give them a hard time because they're homeless in Santa Cruz.
How many stops would you say you saw? How many people actually got stopped if you were to estimate what you saw?
Four.
Four people?
Yeah.
And you also saw some of this?
No. I've seen a lot of police officers. This is about, about 8 this morning. Started gathering around town for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But you didn't see any actual arrests happening or tickets being given?
No, I just seen a lot of police officers. They're actually on each corner. From here to see almost, what's that, Front Street?
Uh-huh.
There's a cop on each corner.
And were they talking to people? Were they standing there? What were they doing?
They were just sitting there in the cars. There's a motorcycle cop on this corner. There's a cop on that corner, there's a cop on that corner, and so on each corner.
How long did you stay to observe this? Were you just passing by?
I was just driving through, just noticing all the cops on each corner. It's kind of strange.
Anything else either of you want to say to the Free Radio Santa Cruz audience?
No, not really.
We need to say is that the people should know about the cops in Santa Cruz, and they should get a handle on something before something really does bad happen. And that's all I got to say.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Last 6 months, you've gotten how many tickets?
Five.
These are for sleeping?
Yeah, sleeping.
Now, was this inside the city or outside?
Inside Santa Cruz city limits.
And were you told there was a complaint?
Yeah, complaints, and the cops told us to leave, vacate the area.
But did the police say a citizen had complained about you or not?
No.
And was it different police officers, the same, any combination?
I've been stopped twice now by the same cop for camping.
Do we know his name?
No.
And what kind of conversation did they have with you?
Telling us we got to leave and we can't camp here. I mean, it's against the law, and they harass us and give us a real hard time about doing about it. And I don't feel it's fair to the people of Santa Cruz that we have to deal with problems like this that we can't deal with. I mean, right now that we were homeless and we're trying to better ourselves, trying to go through Santa Cruz, but I mean, it's not that easy trying to sleep every night either.
Now, tonight, are you sleeping outside again?
Yes.
And when was the last time you were ticketed or harassed for sleeping outside?
A month ago.
Would you say that indicates that the police have let up, or that you are more careful where you sleep, or?
More careful where I sleep now to protect myself and the people that are around me, I mean, to not get caught up in the bullshit of Santa Cruz with the police department.
Have you gotten any sense that the police are less, giving out less tickets, or let's say harassing people less than a month ago, or is it the same? Is it more? Any sense?
It's more. Police now are harassing a lot of people at the shelter, of the homeless people. Period. I mean, I don't know what we could do about it, but I mean, we gotta figure something out to prevent this from.